You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Friday, March 11th, 2019. This is your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Great to have you with us today as we are near the start of the new league year, which will come Wednesday. And as of today, the legal tampering period begins, which means teams are allowed to speak with players, even though the league year has not begun yet. The league tries to emphasize that teams and players are not allowed to reach contract agreements, which nobody adheres to. How can you tell somebody to start negotiating, but you how can you tell somebody you're allowed to start negotiating, but you're not allowed to reach a resolution? Well, what if the negotiations go really well? So the league has no mechanism by which to prevent that from happening. I mean, the whole idea of the legal tampering period, as we talked about last week, is kind of ridiculous. Teams tampered, broke the rules, and the league's response was not to punish the teams that break the rules. The league's response was to, okay, well, we'll make it legal. And what do you think that does now? I'm sure teams have been tampering illegally over the last couple of days because the league has shown you that there are no consequences to tampering, that the more you tamper, the more they'll just make it legal. Anyway, so we're set for the offseason to begin. We'll end that rant. But in some ways, the offseason has begun for the Jets. It began over the weekend, and especially on Sunday where they make a big trade. The Jets bring in their first import of the offseason. It is Kelechi Osemele, the guard from the Oakland Raiders. The Jets acquire Osemele and the 196th pick in the NFL draft in exchange for the 140th pick. So in other words, Jets give up a pick at the top of the fifth round and in exchange receive Osemele and a pick middle to bottom of round number six. The Raiders pick originally belonged to Chicago. This is the Bears' sixth round pick. They got it as part of the Khalil Mack trade. So essentially the Jets trade down. They drop, 46 spots in exchange for a new starting guard. A move that, you know, on paper makes a lot of sense, I think. I think first of all, and you know, you can read too much into this. Sometimes it pans out this way, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm always interested in the first move you make in the offseason. What's the move you use to set the tone? What's your top priority? What's the first thing you want to fix? And again, sometimes the offseason kind of veers off course from this, but I think we all know that the offensive line is a priority or should be a priority for this team. So good to see Mike Maccagnan. First move out of the gate is addressing the offensive line. You know, that's a smart move, I think. I think that shows the right priority. The Jets gave up practically nothing. This was essentially a salary dump. The Raiders were just trying to get anything they could. They obviously were just ready to move on from this player. And to me, once you get to round five and beyond, we're past the point where you can reasonably expect to find a good player. I think that, you know, once you're at that point, your odds of finding a player is about equal for every pick from that point forward. So it's really kind of a guessing game by that point. That's why I'm a big proponent of trading down on day three, because it's as much about quantity at that point as it is about quality of picks. So I don't think that there's a big difference in the odds you find a good player between pick 140 and pick 196. So essentially get a player for free. You know, I'm not a big fan of the idea of, you know, trades at this time of year, because in most cases, the guy you're trading for, you're giving something up extra when there's a comparable free agent you can sign for just money. But this is an instance where I probably would have supported this trade even if the Jets were just giving up a straight pick. And I'll tell you why. I look at the guard market this year, and I don't think it's a very good guard market. I don't think there are a lot of guards out there who really intrigue me. I think Roger Saffold would be the one guy. And now if you're asking me, would I rather have Saffold or Osemele, I'd probably go with Saffold because he's coming off a better season. But here's the thing is, you can't guarantee me that the Jets are going to be able to sign Saffold. Free agency is very unpredictable. We don't know what's going to happen. And even though the Jets would be in a position probably to beat any other offer for Saffold, we don't know whether he'd want to come to the Jets. The Jets may not be that he may not want to move to New York. He may not want to move across the country. It could be anything. He may not want to play in cold weather. I mean, when you get to this level, it's just a matter of personal preference. You know, the one analogy I always use is, you know, if you want to be, you want to work in finance, there's an advantage to moving to New York. You want to start a technology company, you go to the Silicon Valley. You want to be an actor, you go to Los Angeles. There's an advantage to doing that. Or if you want to be a stage actor, an actor who, you know, performs live shows, you go to New York on Broadway. You know, you want to work in politics, you can move to Washington, D.C. There's an advantage in some area, in some fields, to living in a city. That's where the good jobs are. You know, that's where most of the work is. For football players, the city is the NFL. I mean, essentially, once you get to the NFL is what you're aiming to do. It's not one specific city. So then, once you're in the NFL, when you have a choice, you know, the top two reasons players tend to move are money and the chance to win. But there are other soft factors beyond that. If the money's equal and the chances of winning are equal, it comes down to preference, you know, things like that. You know, what climate do you want to live in? What tax structure most favorite? It's tough to say. Each person has their own individual preferences. So I don't know whether Roger Saffold would have wanted to come to the Jets. And you're kind of taking a gamble out there because, look, everybody needs offensive line help. I mean, there's an offensive line crisis in this league right now. There are not many good linemen out there. So I can't guarantee you that Roger Saffold would have wanted to come to the Jets. The Jets would have ended up landing him. So in that context, when I have a chance to get a guy like Osemele for, you know, flipping a 5 for a 6, that makes sense to me. You know, that's the type of trade that where it makes sense. See, when I'm making a trade at this time of year, there has to be a reason for it. There has to be some reason that making a trade is superior to signing a free agent. This year, I think at the guard position, it's just the lack of quality beyond Saffold. So that's why, you know, I see logic in this move. And not only that, but it guaranteed you get this guy. I think that if the Jets had not pulled off this trade, one of two things happen. Either another team swoops in, which certainly, even though the Jets did not give much up, I mean, lots of teams need a guard. It would not have been crazy to see some other team swoop in and make a deal if the Jets were not there to get it. But even if they did not, Osemele is going to hit the market. And he's probably going to be one of the top free agents at guard. These guys, the Jets are probably going to be interested in anyway. Jets are probably going to look to sign him anyway. So to guarantee that you land him instead of getting into a free agency bidding war where he may not want to come to you and, you know, there may be some preference he has that would keep him out of New York, you guarantee you get him for the price of flipping a 5 for a 6. That's, you know, that's a move that makes sense to me. In fact, Jets gave up so little that I almost view this move in the context, almost, not quite, but very close to viewing it in the context that you essentially signed him to a contract. It's essentially signing him to a free agent deal where he'll cost $10.2 million, which, you know, is quite pricey for a guard. I mean, it is one of the top cap hits for guards in the league. But a guy who has been a high level performer in the past. Now, not a great 2018, which is a little bit of a concern where he's coming off an injury. But, you know, if you gave this guy hit the market and you told me the Jets signed, and I told you the Jets signed this guy to a $10.2 million deal, I don't think anybody would be up in arms about that. I think that, you know, you'd say, okay, I can see that. Locked On Jets podcast on this Monday as Jets start to build their 2019 roster. Plenty to do. They made their first, well, I mean, if you want to call it an upgrade, on over the weekend when they make the trade with Oakland for Kelechi Osemele, the former Pro Bowl guard, a guy who has been in the Pro Bowl two of the last 3 years, was a first-team All-Pro in 2016, guy they hope will upgrade their left guard position, and a very McCagnon-esque move. And I don't mean McCagnon-esque in the sense it's good or bad. I mean, stylistically, if you look at the way he's dealt with the offensive line, there have been lots of moves like this where he looks to get the guy with a good track record who's kind of fallen on hard times, been banged up, and tries to get them on the rebound. And, you know, sometimes it works out well. Kelvin Beachum's an example. James Carpenter, when they signed him, was kind of very up and down, very injury prone during his career. I mean, those are two moves that have worked out reasonably well. Sometimes it does not work out so well, like with Ryan Clady back in 2016 or Spencer Long. And I would say that this is a style he's going to have to change. I don't see I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this, because I don't think it's a bad way if it's part of how you build your offensive line. Because again, they found some decent players this way, and this is a deal that could work out very well for the Jets. I think, on paper, this move makes you can see the logic behind this move. But I don't think it's the only way you can build the offensive line. I think, and that we're not going to find out whether he's changed until we get to the draft, because the Jets need to start drafting some high-end young talent. You can get a couple pieces, maybe two pieces of your offensive line this way, but I don't think you can build a full unit this way. So they got a piece that they needed, I think, and the rest of it just comes down to how well he plays. He's coming off a bad year. He's coming off a year where he was banged up. The question is that the start of a downswing? If it is, well, all this praise we're giving it, really going to be moot. We're not going to remember this trade fondly. It's not going to go down as a good trade if it's the start of his decline. But if he can get back to the form he had before 2018, this is probably going to be a wonderful move for the Jets. It's going to be a move that will help to stabilize the offensive line. Now, they're not done with the offensive line yet. They're not done up front yet. But a move that certainly could help the team, a move that could go down, is a very good move for this team. But as always, it comes down to how well he plays. It doesn't matter what we say now. It doesn't matter what you think at the time of the deal. It matters how well the guy plays. On paper, I think I see the logic to the move. Now the question is, how well will he play? If he can get back to his old form, because this guy was, I mean, this is a move. I don't think you can ever say a move is low risk when you're taking on a $10 million contract and you're expecting a guy to play a starter role, to never come off to play 100% of your snaps. Jets are going to be hurt if this doesn't work. So it's not no risk. A no-risk move, a low-risk move, is a move where you sign a guy and you're not counting on him to do anything. And, it's a cheap deal and you can cut him at the end of training camp if he doesn't show you. This is a move that has risk, but the upside on this is also extremely high. This is about, maybe Saffold, this is about as high upside of a move as the Jets could have made at guard. This is a big swing. This is a chance for them to really get a stellar guard in there. You really fix this offensive line. So we'll see how it works out. And, it comes down to details that we just don't have. Can he stay healthy? Can he get back to that old level of play? You can see the upside of this move. You can see this being a wonderful move for this team if it all works out well. And, it's the type of first move that I think you wanted to see. Or at least it's the first. I'm not going to speak for you. I'm going to tell you, this is the type of first move that I wanted to see as we kick off this. We get close to kicking off this new league year. Now, we talked about how this was a Maccagnan-esque move on the offensive line. I think there are two traits that Maccagnan has followed on the offensive line. The first is that he's tried to build it primarily through veteran guys with track records trying to rebound from injuries. The second one, I'm going to say, is a negative. The first one is kind of neutral. Some work, some don't. The second move, I'm going to tell you, the second philosophy is a negative. He brings back the same bad backups every year. And the Jets re-signed Jonathan Harrison over the weekend, the backup center. And I think this is going to be a move that gets more praise than it deserves, because I don't think it deserves any praise. People are going to praise it. You've seen it in the media. This is the type of move that always gets praised in the media because the beat writers know this guy, and they don't know a lot of the other backups. So they assume because they know this guy, he's a good backup. And this is a guy who I think is probably overrated in the fan base even, because fans are comparing him to Spencer Long, and he was better than Spencer Long when he took over the lineup. And again, I think name recognition helps him, because I think there's just this idea that when you recognize a game, he must be better than a lot of the alternatives out there. But here's what I'm going to tell you is there are two things that kind of stuck out to me about the late season offensive line play for the Jets. Is A, everybody complained that the Jets were getting dominated in the trenches late in the season. And B, Jets fans said a lot that Spencer Long was better at guard, was improving at guard, and Harrison was a stable, hold-the-fort kind of guy at center. Now, A and B cannot both be true. If the Jets are getting dominated up the middle in the trenches, that must mean that something's going wrong in the middle. So, they can't both be true. Or if the guys are playing well, that means they're not getting down. Well, I watched those games. You watched those games. I think it's pretty clear they were dominated in the trenches during those games. I pulled up Sharp Football Stats, and it's a great website. Lots of statistical, lots of data, lots of stats, lots of data. Good stuff on there. And I plugged in how the Jets ran, how effective the Jets were running to certain spots of the field late in the season after Harrison took over the center job. And I found that from Thanksgiving on, which, you know, Harrison started the number of games near the end of the year. From Thanksgiving on, the Jets averaged 2.9 yards per carry when they were running behind the center. You know, that's not good enough. That's not very good. And Harrison was a below average pass blocker as well. You know, this is just, I think this is a move that's going to get too much credit. I don't think this is a move that deserves much credit. I think, here's my thing. It's really tough to build offensive line depth. I actually don't expect the Jets to have quality backups next year. But the only way to get quality backups is to look for quality backups. It's not keep bringing the same guys back year after year after year when you know they can't do the job. An older guy like Harrison. He's not old, but he's not that young either. There's not really much upside left when a guy's been in the league as long as Harrison has been. So I'd rather those snaps go to a young, give the practice reps to a young guy who at least could develop into a quality center. And part of this is not about Harrison. It's about how the Jets just keep bringing these same guys back who can't play, like Quale or the annual ridiculous Ajalanda contract, which I hope will end soon. I mean, nothing against the guy personally, but I really hope that that last year was the last year of the ridiculous Ajalanda contract. It's become an annual rite of passage with the Jets at every spring. Every year as the new league year begins, there's a ridiculous Ben Ajalanda contract. Look, if they want to bring him to camp, fine. I think if Jonathan Harrison's on this roster at the start of next season, that's not a win for the Jets. If they don't have anybody who can beat him out for that backup job. And you know what's funny is, like, I was reading these people saying, like he's an okay backup, but they certainly can't start. It didn't even dawn on me that this guy could be the starter. I mean, Florida, this guy was the starter. So I don't want to get too fired up over, you know, a backup center contract that's not even going to guarantee him a spot on the roster. I just hope that the Jets look elsewhere. I hope that the Jets find somebody who can beat him out, because I don't see where this guy is like a quality backup. I don't see where he's a hold the fort guy. I think the team's in a lot of trouble if this guy has to play significant snaps. This is not a guy who I really think can run block effectively or pass block effectively. I mean, I think the best thing that ever happened to him was that he replaced Spencer Long, who couldn't even execute a shotgun snap. So after that, even if the guy couldn't block a shotgun snap, would look pretty good. But that does not necessarily make quality depth. So I think, I'd like to see the Jets go in a different direction. Locked On Jets podcast, Jets making additions, looking for other upgrades. And finally, they did have a free agency visit over the weekend. It's Kevin Johnson, the former first-round pick of the Houston Texans. Only played one game this year. In fact, he's been in the league 4 years, only 35 games. Corner, played college ball at Wake Forest. And I'll answer the question you might be asking is, wait a minute, I thought the legal tampering period did not begin until Monday. I thought you could not bring in free agents. Kevin Johnson was released by the Houston Texans. So when a player has no contract, when he's been cut, he can sign with a team at any point. So that's why you see guys like Eric Weddle who were cut. You know, guys who were cut, Spencer Long signs with the Bills. Guys who were cut are not, guys who have no contract are free to sign with anybody anytime. Whereas the guys who have contracts like, you know, Anthony Barr, Tevin Coleman, even though they're about to hit free agency, they're still technically, their team has not cut them. So they're still technically under contract until the new league year begins, because their contract runs league year to league year, which is why the Jets cannot talk with them until today and cannot start officially signing people till the new league year begins on Wednesday. So that's the reason Jets could bring in Kevin Johnson for a visit when they could not bring in a lot of other guys. And, you know, with Johnson, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. This is not a guy, only 35 games in 4 years, lots of concussion issues, played 16 his first year, but since then 6, 12, one game, 6 games 2016, 12 games 2017, one game this past year. Again, concussion issues. I view this guy as like kind of, if you sign him, you're viewing it as a lottery ticket. You're not viewing it. You cannot sign a guy like this and say, okay, this guy's my starting corner. You're asking for some trouble if you do that, because this is, again, a guy who struggled to stay on the field. What I view this guy is you're looking to maximize your luck. You know, who gives you the best chance of really pleasantly surprising you? And maybe it's a former first round corner who has struggled. You know, a guy who, you know, maybe you bring him to camp and then you suffer a couple of injuries and you feel like you're in trouble. Who's the most likely guy to surprise you and really stand out, do a good job then? And I think that's the context you look at a guy like this. And it seems like he has a lot of people, a lot of teams interested in him. He's been on a number of visits already. So it seems like he's taking his time. He wants to look at, survey his options a little bit. Maybe some of the teams are holding off to make their offers. I mean, this is not really a guy who profiles to set the market. So guy we'll keep our eye on to see if he ends up with the Jets, but not a guy. I mean, this is not a guy you can count on to play 16 games because, again, he's played 35 games. He's averaging less than 10 games a season. He's been in the league 4 years, 35 games. So that's, you know, that's not somebody you're going to count on. That's somebody that you might bring in. You know, I always say this, you got to bring 90 guys to training camp. So, I mean, there's a percentage of guys you're bringing to training camp who have absolutely zero chance of making your roster, zero chance of making any sort of impact on your team. This is a guy who you would bring in, you wouldn't see, this would be like a low-risk move if you do this right. You know, if you bring him in, you see what he has. You say, this guy was a first-round pick. It's the issue with him has been not being able to stay on the field. The Texans actually picked up his fifth-year option, and then they cut him. And I think the reason they cut him is that the fifth-year option becomes guaranteed if the guy suffers a serious injury and can't play. And this is a guy who's been really banged up, so they don't want to they don't want to take that chance, I guess. But this would be like a low-risk option. The upside is obviously not as high as the trade the Jets made for the guard, but it's a move that, you know, he's probably better than a lot of the guys the Jets would be bringing as part of their 90 training camp. It would not guarantee him a spot on the roster, but it's probably a better use of one of those camp slots than any number of guys the Jets would bring to training camp. So anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify. Leave the show a good review in iTunes if you like it. Hope you have a great Monday, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow as free agency really kind of kicks off. We'll talk about the Jets and what they're doing.